What up, son? It's the tale of the tapes. The fuck life. Saying?
All right, let's go. Tale of the tapes, season 3, episode number 9. And first and foremost, before I get into anything to do with this episode at all today, I have to pause for a second and let everybody know I have a pretty sick shirt on that I didn't really wear today on purpose, but it's pretty damn fitting that I'm wearing this right now. So it's a Friends t-shirt, like the TV show Friends. And my wife actually likes the TV show Friends, but she also knows that it's nothing for me personally against Friends. I don't dislike Friends at all, but I'm just very against like trendy shit. So like when certain clothes start coming out and shit and everybody starts wearing them, if I was wearing that shit back when it was unpopular, I probably won't even wear it anymore when it becomes popular. So she knows that I'm kind of like that with things that everybody are wearing. And she has some Friends t-shirts and shit like that. So this one says Friends and it's written in the font like the TV show. But then under it, instead of having the characters from the Friends TV show, it has Biggie, Snoop Dogg, Eminem, Ice Cube, Tupac, Eazy-E, and Dr. Dre on it. So, you know, this shirt is pretty classic. My girls got it for me for Christmas, so shout out to them. They're always awesome, always doing cool shit like that. So I did have to point out what a dope shirt we got on here today. Various artists who have finished in different varying spots here, but nonetheless, much respect to all those guys. Absolute legends, no doubt about it. And on today's episode, we will be covering Nature and Shine. So first and foremost, for anybody who's not really familiar with Nature or who Nature is, Nature was a member in the firm. Previously had Cormega in it, who he actually is coming up in a couple of weeks or maybe a month or so. And we'll get more into that later. But the firm officially, when they released music, was Nature, AZ, Nas, and Foxy Brown. Now, as far as my opinions and expectations on these two, Nature, I was super intrigued to do for actually more reasons than one. So I always heard Nas bringing Nature up, and I really knew little to nothing of him aside from maybe a few verses on a Firm song or two. So after Nas scored as well as he did in this study, I was intrigued to see why Nas was always bringing Nature up. Then after AZ, who was also in the Firm with Nas and Nature, scored as well as he did, I was like, damn, I have to almost assume that Nature's gonna be ridiculous at this point. So realistically, I knew almost nothing of him, but because of the circumstances surrounding him, I was not only intrigued to cover him, but expected him to score pretty well despite the little I knew of him, which is not typically the case with most people that I don't know a lot of. Now, that's not to say that somebody can't be dope just because I don't know them, but when you look at like other factors and, you know, how versed in hip-hop I am, and it's like I never heard this dude's name or heard a song from this dude before, it would be really shocking and impressive if they really wound up finishing that high. Even if they were really good and got a really high lyrical score, you still have to take other things into consideration. So the likelihood of somebody that I don't know finishing really high is not very promising. Shine, on the other hand, I knew probably the exact same things about as everyone else did. He had a big song or two and then was put in jail right away for shooting someone in the face. The story that everybody knows if you were around at that time. Personally, I was never a big fan of Shine, but that's just personal preference. I just didn't really like his sound, but he does have one of my favorite diss tracks of all time. And ironically enough, he's dissing 50 Cent in that song, who we literally just covered last week on the last episode of this podcast. So right there, you can see how close we were to having another ridiculous quote-unquote coincidence happen, even though I still think it's a little nuts that these two are being covered in back-to-back weeks. But As far as my predictions on Shine, I guess I figured he'd finish somewhere around the middle, but outside of the top half. So, like, in that general middle section, but in the bottom half of the middle. So, yeah, let's just get right into these two and see if I was anywhere close on either of these predictions. Both of these artists had their debut albums out in the year 2000, but Nature was out first, so we're going to start off here with him today. His birth name is Jermaine Baxter. He was born December 5th, 1972. Origins listed as Queens, New York City, United States. Genres listed as hip-hop. And his years active are listed as 1993 to present. So definitely nothing there that we really need to discuss. So let's just get right into some more background info on Nature and see how that reads. Jermaine Baxter, born December 5th, 1972, better known as Nature, is an American rapper who grew up in Queensbridge, New York, and went to school with Nas. Nas introduced Nature to the public in 1997 as a member of his supergroup The Firm, whose members also included AZ and Foxy Brown. Nature was brought in to replace rapper Cormega, who had a contractual dispute with Nas's manager Steve Stout. The Firm's first and only album, Nas, Foxy Brown, AZ, and Nature Present The Firm, the album, went platinum and topped the Billboard 200 album chart. The group disbanded in 1997 to pursue various solo projects. In 1998, Nature was featured on Noriega's single Banned From TV alongside Big Pun, Cameron, Jadakiss, and Styles P. After several delays, Nature's debut album, For All Seasons, was released in 2000 by Columbia Records and featured a guest appearance from Nas. It reached number 50 on the Billboard 200. Three of his tracks were included on the soundtrack of the film Angels in America in 2003. So, initially, all I could find about Nature was that he was Nas's friend who was a rapper that replaced Mega in The Firm. I didn't really think that was entirely fair, so I dug a little bit deeper and found what I just read to you. Not an overabundance of information, but definitely more there than I found originally, and I thought it was pretty relevant info, so I'll take it, but like I said, not too much there aside from some info on The Firm and a couple of songs addressed and stuff like that. So for now, let's just get into my breakdown of Nature and then we can discuss the numbers. Being a relatively big Nas fan from when I was younger, I of course knew of Nature through Nas and The Firm. I hadn't, however, heard much from Nature individually aside from maybe some featured verses and one or two songs. While Nature had times where he was consistently great, he fluctuated that through the course of his career. Early on, he had some iffy lines. As time went on and he neared his peak, he was good with multisyllabic rhymes and also pretty good with using different rhyme schemes. He was also usually pretty good at being able to keep a topic throughout the entirety of a song. In the second half of his career, however, less syllables started rhyming, less rhyme schemes were used, rhymes became more common and simplistic, and something just seemed to be missing overall after his second album. All in all, the good did outweigh the bad, and Nature finished as an above-average lyricist overall. Between himself and The Firm, Nature still only managed to register a total of 5 albums for scoring. The Firm album and the first solo album were great albums, and his second solo album was a classic. After that, things took a steady decline, and his last 2 albums were good albums. Of his 67-song catalog, he put out 8 great songs in comparison to only one weak one and had another 29 good ones on top of it. That makes just about half of Nature's material good or better, which is pretty impressive. While Nature did have a brief stint with The Firm alongside some major players in the game, as well as showing a clear ability to be very impressive technically, he didn't do much else in the impact department. With only 5 albums, 67 songs, and no clear visible influences on any other artist to date, the impact department wasn't Nature's best. He didn't fare much better in the originality department, as his image, slang, content, and sound were relatively typical. On top of that, he took a decent amount from other artists before him, considering the size of his body of work. So that sounds like somebody who clearly showed potential, one classic album, etc., then all of a sudden did, I don't want to say a 180, because if you were really good and you did a 180, then you would be really bad. So whatever, he made a 90 degree turn, or you know what I'm saying, maybe whatever, a 135 degree turn. He went a little bit in the wrong direction, whatever way you want to put it. But, you know, whatever. Just get the point that I'm trying to make, that in the second half of his career, there was definitely a halt to what he was doing. And again, that's not to say that he was bad, but he definitely stopped getting better and was much, much less impressive in the second half of his solo stuff. So let's take a look at the math here for Nature and see how these opposite showings fared in total. Lyrics, he gets a 6. Like I said, overall, he gets an above average lyric score. The good did outweigh the bad. And there was a period, like, right before he started to kind of go in the wrong direction, I was like, yo, I'm not sure that Nature is going to score the way that Nas and AZ did, but this dude is fucking dope. I mean, really early on, there were definitely some lines where I was like, eh, you know, we could have done without that line, but nothing really bad. But he was, for a bit, he was good with multisyllabic rhymes. He was pretty good with using different rhyme schemes and stuff like that. He was pretty good at being able to keep a topic throughout a song, all these types of things. So I definitely was impressed. And had he continued in the same direction at the same pace he was going, that lyrical score probably would have been like a 7. And this is a tough one to say. I don't want to like say this on record officially, but it's just kind of a hunch that I have that The Firm might have been, technically speaking, one of the greatest rap groups of all time. Now, I don't know that they would score that way in this study, and there's a couple of red flags immediately. Number one, Foxy Brown didn't even qualify for the study because she didn't really write her own lyrics. So it's like, can you even be considered the greatest rap group of all time with one album and a quarter of your members not even writing their own lyrics? That just doesn't really sit well with me. But when we take all the technical things out of it and we just look at like just rap skills and like lyric scores and classic albums and things like that, bro, The Firm might be one of the greatest rap groups of all time. Like I said, they wouldn't score that way in here because you got one person that doesn't even make the cut due to a disqualification of not writing their own lyrics, and you only have one album as a group. But I'm more so talking about, it's like saying an all-star team is the greatest team of all time. But what did they accomplish? They won an all-star game. They didn't do anything. They never won a gold medal. They never won an NBA championship. Well, no, of course not. You know, like we can't really say anything like that. But we're just talking about man for man, skill for skill. The Firm is up there, bro. And I got some solid rap groups left that I got to cover. And I'm certainly not saying The Firm is my favorite, but when we're talking about just like skill for skill, like lyrics, classic albums, great songs, things like that, and we're looking down each aisle of each individual person, man, these people are fucking hard to touch. And should Nature have continued on in that direction, he would have been right in there with that. Now, again, that's not to say that Nature didn't do well. A 6 is an above average score, and keep in mind that he got that 6 while kind of trending in the wrong direction for 2 straight albums. Again, that's not to say he was bad, but let's just say he was more like a 5 or a 5.5 on both of those albums. If he scored as a 6.5 through 2 albums or 3 albums, right? One of them being a group that he didn't have that many songs on. So 2 of his own albums, right? And he's at a 6.5. If he's now a 5 or a 5.5 for the next 2 albums, that accounts to almost 50% of his material. He now has to move back from a 6 to a 6.5. That doesn't mean that he was bad. He was still average or maybe above average on those last 2 albums. But in comparison to where his score sits when those 2 albums starts, he's now doing worse than what his lyrical score was. And that has to be met in the middle because there's not a huge body of work there. So again, if he goes from a 6.5 to a 6, you can then flip that and say that he was going to go from a 6.5 to a 7 had he continued in the same direction that he was going. That's not to say that he even really had to get any better. Would he have just kept pace? He probably would have got that 7. And that would be really impressive stuff, man. That would be the worst lyricist in the group getting a 7 and still having a classic album to his name. The other 2 guys probably got 3 or 4 and 7 or 8 or 9 classics. So between these 3 people, you're looking at probably 20 classic albums, the lowest lyrical score being a 7, all these guys having great album scores, and their song scores all being higher than a plus one. That's the minimum. So it's just kind of crazy when you look at the actual potential and skill level of each individual person in this group, for sure. Like I said, Foxy Brown excluded, and that's not to shit on Foxy Brown, but we just can't, there would be no way to score Foxy. What am I going to give her, a zero in the lyric score? Like, it would just be no way to score somebody that doesn't write their own rhyme. So, unfortunately, that's an automatic disqualification. And listen, I know some people do this, bro. I'm not like overly naive. I know there's ghostwriters out there. I know some people get help. I know some people flat out don't write any of their rhymes, or just flat out don't write some songs or whatever. But it's not as common as people think.
Yo, barely anybody writes their rhymes.
Not true, bro. There are plenty and plenty and plenty of dope lyricists out there that would never let anybody else write a bar from them. Having a suggestion or kind of, you know, a piece of advice is a different story. Having somebody genuinely just sit down and write bars for you is definitely a different thing. And to have somebody write whole songs and whole albums, you know, I don't want to go off on a tangent about that, but it just can't be allowed in this podcast. And I know generally it's typically frowned upon in the hip-hop community in general. Not by everybody, of course, but in general. But not to get too off topic, but Nature did kind of cap out midway through, did kind of trend a little bit in the wrong direction, still winds up with an above average score of 6 in the lyrics department here, but definitely was capable of getting a higher score, certainly showed potential to do that without a doubt. Albums, he gets a 5.54 with one classic album. So first of all, that's a great album score. Now, not an overabundance of albums, only 5 albums, and that's including the group album with The Firm. So, you know, only 67 songs. Like I said, not a tremendous amount of material, but we're not talking about like one album. It's not like the guy only made one album. Now, listen, even if you made one album and it was a great album, I mean, bang, you nailed it, right? Like, okay, it wasn't a classic, but yo, I only made one album, but it's a great album. All right, cool. I mean, thanks for making it. You know what you know what I'm saying? If I enjoy it, then good stuff. You know, for those that don't enjoy it, then fine. But, you know, the more that you put out, like, if you got 20 albums and, you know, your worst material is great, that's obviously way more impressive than only 5. But, I mean, still, we have to give credit where it's due here. We got 5 albums registered for scoring, and he still comes up with a great album score. So that's very impressive stuff. Like I said, 2 albums were great. He gets one classic album. And then his 2 worst albums, you know, quote unquote worst albums, were still good albums. So all in all, he gets a great album score. His worst albums were good albums. And he gets the extra point for the classic album. So very solid stuff there from Nature in the albums department. No doubt about that. Songs, he gets a plus 1.1. We say it every week. Plus or minus a full point in this department starts to become big. Almost exactly a point gained here for Nature. He gets plus 1.1. The way that he got that was a 67-song catalog, 8 great songs in comparison to only one weak one. That came out to 11%. You move the decimal over one place, that gives you a plus 1.1. Now, again, I say this one all the time just to try to make a point. You can lose points in this department, as everybody knows, and should that have been one great song and 8 weak songs, that would have been a minus 1.1. That's a 2.2 swing there. So majorly important stuff there on those 8 great songs and only putting out the one weak one there for Nature. He gets himself just over another point there. So that's an extra 2.1 there with the songs and the classic albums, right? Because you could be losing, zero is breaking even, right? But he didn't get zero, he got 1.1. And if he didn't have the classic album, that's another point. So 2.1 points there that could have easily been nothing, and we wouldn't have even said anything negative about it. Had his album score just been a 5.54, I would have been like, that's a great album score, very impressive, and moved right on. Had his songs been a zero, I would have been like, listen, it's nice to gain points, but it, you know, staying at zero is better than losing points. So he manages to basically sneak in an extra 2.1 here between his albums and his songs with the classic in there. Impact, he gets a just below average score of a 4.5 here. And again, we've had a lot of these more recently, and we've spoken about this a bunch of times. So I don't want to get too into the explanation because it's kind of the same thing repeated over and over and over again. This is the classic thing that you see with people with the 4.5, you know, around some really popular people, possibly even in a group with some really popular people. Generally, a relatively small catalog, you know, maybe 5 albums or less, generally speaking. And that's usually even including the group stuff. So, again, just typical stuff here as a 4.5. No major mainstream commercial success. Now, again, and I said this when we were covering, I believe it was Goldie Loke of the East Side, is when I say that, we have to, again, look at things for what they are. Now, I can't always say why things happen. I can only say what happened, when it happened, and what were the circumstances surrounding it. I'm just only presenting facts here. And I'm not trying to paint false pictures. I'm just simply going to say what it is. And listen, everybody's entitled to believe what they want to believe. Excluding the first 30 seconds to a minute of my podcast episodes where I give my opinions and expectations, I leave out what I believe from this podcast, but everybody's free to believe what they want to believe. But back to the point I was making before is that, okay, what do we have here, right? We have the Firm, who as a group comes out with one album and one album only that goes platinum and reaches number 5 on the Billboard 200, right? And Nature's a part of that. Okay, cool. What are the other facts surrounding that? Who's in the group? Nas. Okay, Nas is huge. What has Nas done? Nas has gone platinum. Nas has done this. Nas has done that. Nas is a legend in the game. He's one of the biggest names in hip-hop, one of the most respected names in hip-hop. He's an OG. He's a lyricist. He's got classic albums. Probably, arguably, has, if not one of the greatest hip-hop albums in history, and I'm not talking about my study or technically speaking, I'm talking about the general opinion, if not one of the greatest albums in hip-hop history, certainly one of the more popular albums in hip-hop history, and that's not speaking on album sales, which are definitely great on it, but when I speak about popularity, I'm talking about when you say to everybody, like, what's your favorite hip-hop album of all time, or if you could only listen to one hip-hop album, yada yada, Illmatic is generally thrown out there pretty damn often. So, again, when you look at who he's next to, okay, does that mean that he went platinum because of Nas? No, doesn't. So, again, I'm not saying anything here. I'm not saying that the Firm only went platinum because of Nas. I'm just saying the Firm did go platinum. Nature is in there, and so is Nas. Okay? Now let's move forward. Well, Nature came out with solo material, right? He did. Did it go platinum? No. Any of it? No. Did it come close to going platinum? No. Did it sell very well? No. Oh, okay. So, each time I ask a question and the answer is no, it becomes a little bit more convincing that Nature, for whatever reason, I don't know if I want to use the word incapable because I don't believe he's incapable. If he invested a lot more money into what he was doing, he could probably go platinum on an album, but he didn't. Okay, so Nature doesn't ever go platinum on his own. He only goes platinum when he's in a group with Nas, who does go platinum on his own. So there's one steady figure in this equation, is that every time there's a platinum album, Nas is involved in it. Nature's involved in one of those, but Nas is involved in all of them. Nature is also involved in a bunch that aren't platinum. So again, when you start to look at all these things, you can form your own opinion on why certain things are or aren't happening. Why is Nature switching record labels or doing this? Or why is he not selling the same amount of records that he did when he was in the Firm? Or why is he not selling the same amount of records as Nas or whatever, right? And I'm not here to debate all of that. That's an entirely different conversation. Those are the types of conversations that I'll willingly have with my friends. Who is quote-unquote technically better to me is not really a debate. It's just things that you can look at black and whitely the way that we are in this podcast. And I have a lot of people that for whatever reason believe that that can't be done. And again, I just have to wholeheartedly but respectfully disagree. You know, you have dance shows. Dance is an art. Dance can also be judged because if you're doing a toe touch, right, in a competition, you're going to be judged on how high your leap was, how straight your arms were, how straight your legs were, how pointed your toes were, what the look on your face was, if your head was tilted the right way, right? Because there's ways that things are supposed to be done. Now, to dance, do you have to do it that way? No, you don't. You're free to do your art however you want it. And that doesn't mean that it's not awesome or not entertaining. That doesn't mean that I don't love it. It just means that technically speaking, one is technically better and more difficult than the other. It just is what it is. It's not up for debate. So when we look at something in that fashion, I believe that you can do that with art. Another good example is like tattoo competition shows, right? So surely you're going to involve your opinion in it when you're going to say, man, I like this tattoo better than I like that one, right? And that's fine. You can have your opinion. But when you're eliminating people on the show, what are you looking at? Whose line work is straighter and steadier? Whose thing is more realistic? Or who did a better job at, okay, today was about your line work. Whose line work is better? Today was a black and gray challenge, but so-and-so did a color tattoo. Okay, well, that's not really good, right? I mean, we asked you to do black and gray. Why didn't you do black and gray? Well, he sucks at black and gray. Okay, cool. So we've exposed something here. You see what I'm saying? You're not better than so-and-so because you can't do what so-and-so does. Now, if you want a beautiful color tattoo, you might prefer to go to that dude, or you just might like that dude's style. You understand what I'm saying? But when we stop and we take away what you like or what you'd rather, and we look at technicalities, one dude can do black and gray and color, maybe better technically, than the other dude can only do one. So who's the better tattoo artist? This guy. Even though you might prefer going to that guy, and that's fine. You could still love that guy. He could still be great. But technically speaking, this guy is better, so he's going to win the competition. That's what we're doing here. And a lot of people don't really understand that, and that's fine. I'm not trying to attack anybody. And there's so many people that say this to me so often that it's just a general thing that I feel I always have to address, but that's what we're doing here. And I don't want to get off on too many side tangents, but the whole point of me saying all this was nature's impact score. So you have to look at the fact that he's got no artists on his list of people influenced, at least not yet. You have the classic thing where, you know, you're in a big group with a big person, or you're around big people, but you never really had the success that they had, or maybe not even close. Generally a small body of work, things like that. These are typically your 4.5 people as far as impact is concerned. So nature falls right in line with that, and he gets a just below average score of 4.5 in the impact department. And originality, he doesn't do much better, a little bit, but he gets an average score of 5, and this was close to going to a 4.5 as well, but the 4.5 in impact is close to going to a 5 as well, so these two scores are almost interchangeable. You know, I don't like doing that, but it winds up at the same score, but yeah, these are both right on that borderline. You know, I mean, when your image and your slang and your content and your sound in general were all relatively typical, that doesn't mean that you were necessarily unoriginal, that you bit things or took things from people, but it's not starting you off at a high number, where if you're dressing crazy, but you sample a lot and you take a lot of lines and beats from people, okay, well, maybe he's down to a 7 now, right? But when your image and your slang and your content and all these things are relatively typical off the bat, and then on top of that, you take a decent amount, not a ridiculous amount, but a decent amount of all the artists that came before you with only 5 albums and 67 songs, it starts to push that envelope of getting to that 4.5. But I didn't think it was quite there. I didn't think he was more unoriginal than he was original or anything like that. So I thought he evened out and got a 5 in the originality department there. So you add those 6 numbers up because you have the extra point for the classic album, and you divide by 5, which is the number of categories we have. It gives you a final rating of 4.63. Which leaves Nature in 90th place of 223 artists done overall. So, a couple of things here. First of all, that's not a bad finish for Nature there, who's easily inside the top half. Second of all, for a dude with only 4 solo albums and subpar originality scores to finish inside of the top half like that is even more impressive. And now I urge you to take this into consideration. Not only was all of this done with some low scores in some departments, but it was also done by a dude who was way better in the first half of his career than he was in the second. Now, I don't know why the hit in technical skill happened, but could you imagine where this dude would have finished had he kept his original pace and had more albums? Probably could have been like top 25 when this was all said and done, but nonetheless, that's not what happened. That's all hearsay and speculation, but it definitely is something to think about because when it comes to skills and stuff like that, man, Nature was very, very capable, and for whatever reason, he decided not to ever bring that to its true full potential. But like I said, man, Nature, a very skilled rapper without a doubt. So shouts to Nature and the entire firm for sure. Now, with Nature completed, let's move on to the next artist on the list for today, which is Shine. His birth name is Jamal Michael Barrow, also known as Moses Michael Levy Barrow and Shine. Born November 8, 1978 in Belize City, Belize. His origins listed as Brooklyn, New York City, United States. His genres are listed as hip-hop. And his years active are listed as 1996 to present. So nothing really too out of the ordinary there. The only thing that I really do want to point out about what I just went over is I do believe that Shine is probably the first person that was born in Belize. I don't know that he was the first rapper ever or the first, you know, whatever public or mainstream rapper ever to be born in Belize. That I'm not sure of, but I am pretty sure he's the first one on this study that was born in Belize. Now, obviously, there are plenty of rappers in Belize that may be very popular over there or whatever the case is, or even if they're not, that automatically don't qualify for this study because, unfortunately, I don't speak that language. I don't know what they're saying, yada, yada, yada. I could go on and on. That's all in the introduction to the podcast, the very first episode that's ever been posted of this podcast. So if you're interested in all those details, I definitely suggest going and listening to it. But people outside of North America do not qualify for this study. So other than that, there are definitely some things that I do want to bring up. So let's get into some additional background information on Shine and then we can discuss what I'm referencing. Moses Michael Levy Barrow, born Jamal Michael Barrow, best known by his stage name Shine, born November 8, 1978, is a Belizean rapper and politician. He is the leader of the opposition in the Belize House of Representatives and the leader of the Belize United Democratic Party. Barrow was born in Belize but moved to Brooklyn in New York City as a child and began to rap as a teenager. He is perhaps best known for his 2000 singles Bad Boys and Bonnie and Shine. He also wrote and performed on a number of multi-platinum albums such as Usher's Confessions, Lil Wayne's Carter 4, Notorious B.I.G.'s Born Again, Mace's Double Up, and Puff Daddy's Forever, among other top-selling albums during his tenures with his former labels Bad Boy Records and Def Jam Recordings. Shine and his mother lived in the Brooklyn neighborhood of East Flatbush, where after he was discovered as he was singing in a barbershop, he became a musician and rapper. On the verge of releasing his debut album on the evening of December 27, 1999, he went to a nightclub with his mentor and label boss, Sean Combs, and Combs' then-girlfriend singer-slash-actress Jennifer Lopez. An argument broke out in the club between Combs and another man, guns were drawn, shots fired, and three bystanders were injured. In June of 2001, he was convicted of assault and sentenced to 10 years in prison. His 2000 debut album was nevertheless a success, and he continued to record music while incarcerated. While serving his prison sentence, Shine became interested in Judaism, became observant, practicing Orthodox Judaism, and officially changed his name to Moses Michael Levy Barrow in 2006. After he was released from prison in 2009, he was deported to Belize. In 2010, he moved to Jerusalem, Israel, where he spent his time studying the Torah up to 12 hours a day. He returned to Belize in 2013 and was appointed the Belize Music and Goodwill Ambassador, changed with the sustainable development of the music industry in Belize, and donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to develop it. Okay, so obviously a lot to take in there for Shine, and I think that even though a lot of it isn't necessarily hip-hop related, I still think it's all relevant information for a couple of reasons I'm going to get into now. So first and foremost, we clearly see a very short-lived career, as he was actually incarcerated for 10-plus years prior to the release of his debut album, but regardless of that, he was still featured on some pretty prominent songs and albums and did still continue to record music while locked up. That being said, it was only one album and then he disappeared, or at least I thought. Now, personally, I remember Shine being locked up for what felt like an eternity. Reading up on this, it wasn't necessarily quite as long as it seemed to me, although 10 years is still a long time, so I'm not trying to downplay that. But I obviously expected Shine to continue on with music upon being released from prison, but we see here he was deported to Belize. Now, that in itself certainly doesn't necessarily mean Shine has to stop recording music, but instead of continuing down that path, Shine did a complete 180 and joined a political party of the government over in Belize. Now, in no way, shape, or form am I one of those people who thinks that because you don't agree with my views, you're wrong. So I'm not even going to bring up the Judaism thing, because I don't know if Judaism is real or not, right? Like, I don't know anything about that, and I'm not ignorant like that where I'm going to knock somebody's beliefs. I may have my own personal belief about it, right? But I'm never going to sit there and argue with you about it, because I could be dead wrong and you could be dead right, and I don't know, and you don't know either. So let's not waste each other's fucking time. So listen, you did what you did, right? You got locked up and you had a change of heart, apparently, and you got very religious and whatever. Fine. Cool. Good for you. That's fine. Maybe you grew mentally. Maybe you know, whatever, right? But to do a 180 flip-flop like this on, like, an earthly thing is, like, disgusting in my opinion and said a lot about Shine's character. So let me explain what I mean by this. This guy acted like a super gangster in all of his songs and is now a politician in the government. I'm not saying that to say that Shine was pretending and he wasn't a real gangster. I mean, the dude, I understand it was an accident, the person that he hit, but he still was shooting at somebody and shot somebody in the face or whatever. Now, I don't know what Shine's deal or intentions are, but I'm sorry, this just does not look good in my opinion. People talk about selling out like it's a bad thing, right? And I'm not even going to talk about whether it's good or bad, but let's discuss what we mean when we talk about someone selling out. So typically, these people will have, like, maybe an aggressive or a ghetto sounding style with probably a lot of cursing, and they're technically impressive lyrics and stuff like that, at which point they sign to a major label and switch to a more commercial or poppy sound while dumbing down their lyrics to become more appealing to your everyday person and not just the real major hip-hop heads. But look at the dynamics here. You most likely have a hood dude here who grew up poor with a negative mind frame. So that's what you're getting in his music, right? The whole reason he's probably making music to begin with is to get out of the hood. He's then presented with an opportunity to do just that, get out of the hood, make a lot of money, get out of the shitty situation, but for some reason, he's shamed when he goes through with this. Everything about what he's doing makes perfect sense, yet it's expected to be avoided at all costs. On the flip side of that, here we have a dude who just did a complete 180 on his entire lifestyle, okay? Not his music. His music didn't do a 180. His music stopped, and his lifestyle and everything he stands for did a 180. You went from rapping gangsta and being in jail to working for the government as a politician. In no way, shape, or form did Shine ever present that his intentions were to make money from music, leave the game, and go become a politician. On top of that, we're not just talking about music or the content, we're talking about a dude probably putting people in jail where he came from for doing a lot of the same shit that he used to do or claimed he did or whatever. And I don't want to get into that, because whether he did, there's an issue. Whether he didn't, there's an issue. I'm sorry, man, but nothing about this sits well with me. And I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent about this shit, but I did think it was relevant information that I wanted to give my two cents on, so there's that. But since I'm pretty sure we've gotten that point across, let's get into my write-up of Shine so we can discuss more about how he was as a rapper and an actual artist rather than a person, because this isn't Judgment Day. This is, you know, I'm not God. I'm not judging Shine as a person. So, like I said, let's get into the breakdown so we can check out Shine as an actual rapper and an actual artist. Being that Shine has one of my favorite diss tracks of all time, he was a big letdown for me. Lyrically, he was inconsistent. He was decent in spots with syllables, but also missed many of those opportunities. On top of that, he took shortcuts a lot, used run-on bars, and didn't rhyme sometimes. It was rare that he said anything overly dope or weak, but he did say some ruthless things that demanded your attention. However, a lot of bars were very basic with simplistic rhymes, and he reached for some punchlines. For lack of a better term, he seemed limited and finished average lyrically overall. Shine only managed to register 2 albums for scoring, both of which were good albums. Of his only 26-song catalog, there were both 1 great and 1 weak song, along with another 6 good ones. While Shine did have a couple of popular songs, it's possible that he's more well-known for infamously shooting someone in the face than he is for his songs. He also only had a clear visible influence on Joe Budden up to this point in the study. Aside from his voice and delivery, which even that was reminiscent of Biggie, there wasn't really anything original about Shine from his style and message to his sound and content. On top of that, he took a massive amount of lines and other things from artists before him, especially Snoop Dogg, and all in just 2 albums and 26 songs. So that write-up is not only a personal letdown for me, but sounded like a pretty average artist across the board, which again, we know where that's going to land you at this point in the study, but let's get into the math here for Shine and see where he officially winds up. Lyrics, he gets a 5, and I always say this with people with really small catalogs. I mean, listen, there are some people, you know, The Last Emperor, who we covered not that long ago, only had 1 album, and he got a lyrical score of an 8, right? That guy went fucking berserk from the first to the last song for the most part. When you have people like this who, they're a bit inconsistent, you know, there are some really ruthless, rugged things you're saying where I'm like, oh, okay, you know what I mean? Not a tremendous amount of dope lines, not a tremendous amount of weak lines. You got some run-on bars and shortcuts and things like that. Some spots where you rhyme a lot of syllables, but a lot of spots where you could have rhymed a lot of syllables and didn't or weren't able to or whatever. You know, when you have those types of people, when it's only 2 albums and stuff like that or 1 album, it doesn't really give them time to like sort themselves out and really show you their true colors on what they're better at or worse at. And over time, you're able to say, all right, you know what? Yeah, they do have some decent lines, but you know, through 10 albums, just the run-on bars and the shortcuts and the this, it's just so heavily outweighs the other stuff. They got to go down to a 4.5 or they're going, whatever it is, right? You don't have that with this. Like, you just have a very, very short thing with, you know, 2 albums and 26 songs, and it's the whole time you're kind of like, eh, so that 5 doesn't really ever go anywhere. You know what I'm saying? So he winds up with an average lyrical score of 5 there. Albums, he gets a 4.13 with 0 classics. Obviously, that's a good album score. He only had 2 albums. Both albums were good albums, so he obviously gets a good album score. No extra points for any classic albums or anything like that. And I'm not trying to knock it. Listen, you had 2 albums. They were 2 good albums. But when you're talking about pinning dudes like this up against the greatest rappers of all time, I mean, you have to really look at what's going on here. You have to take everything into consideration. You're talking about only 2 albums, which is small to begin with. They're not even, forget about classics, which even if they were classics, you're only getting 2 extra points, right? Where people like Jay-Z, Eminem, AZ, other people that fucking hammer in Tech N9ne, hammer in 9, 10, 11, 12, whatever crazy amounts of classic albums, it's like, even if all your albums were classic albums, you probably still can't compete with those people just off of sheer volume alone. That's not to say if somebody has a large catalog that they're going to do great, right? Your catalog would have to be large and great. But to only have 2 albums and they were just good albums, it's like, all right, I mean, that's good, but right? At the end of the day, like, we're not seeing anything special here. An average score of 5 in the lyrics department, a good score of 4.13 in the albums department with no classics. Songs, he gets a 0. So there you go again, 26 songs, one great song, one weak song. That evens each other out. He stays even with a 0 in the songs department. So everything is right there, right? Impact, again, he gets a 5. The only real clear thing that I saw for Shine was with Joe Budden. Joe Budden made a diss track over one of Shine's beats. I don't remember exactly who he was dissing, but I definitely remember Joe Budden made a diss track over one of Shine's beats. Aside from that, didn't find anything up to this point in the study that anybody has sampled from Shine, any lines taken from him, any other beats used, things like that. When I come across them, they'll certainly be added, but at this point in time, nothing except for Joe Budden. Again, a small catalog, only 2 albums. Neither of them went platinum or anything like that, but they did okay. I don't want to say like they were terrible, but I mean, no major mainstream commercial success. He did have the 2 popular songs, but again, we're not talking about like a long-standing commercial success here where, you know, somebody has just been platinum album, platinum album, platinum album, this, that, right? And it goes on for 10, 20 years, whatever. We're certainly not seeing that here. So again, we get an average score of a 5 in the impact department here for Shine, which is mostly due to the fact that he brought a lot of attention to himself by shooting somebody in the face and going to jail. And also because at the time that it happened, right, he was already getting popular with the song. So both of the things were happening coincidentally. He was getting popular off his songs, but then he was also getting popular because of what happened. So it was like these 2 things were happening separately, but were starting to coincide and were leaning in on the same person and both making the same person more popular separately. So when you look at it like that, it's like, okay, well, if he, you know, it could be a trade-off, right? Because you could make an argument for either side here. You could say, well, Shine is trending in the right direction, and had he not gone to jail, he would have had more popular songs, and he would have been on more big songs and had more big singles on his next album. But on the flip side of that, you could turn around and say, Shine wasn't really that good. He wasn't doing shit. He already reached his peak. And that whole jail thing did nothing but bring more attention to him. It was the best thing that ever happened to him as far as his career was concerned. You could make an argument for either of those cases because the fact of the matter is, you can't prove one to be right or wrong. What you can prove, and what I did prove, or what I can prove if somebody wants to challenge me, is that Shine did have that buzz going on for whatever reason you would like to point to. If you want to point to the 2 singles, cool, point to the 2 singles. If you want to point to Shine shooting somebody and going to jail, fine, point to that. If you want to point to both of them in conjunction and say that neither one of them would have happened without the other, that's fine too. Fact of the matter is, though, they happened, and that's what I'm here to point out. So when you take some of the shortcomings into consideration and you take some of the positive things, and positive in quotes, I'm not saying him going to jail was positive, but I'm talking about as far as bringing popularity and attention to his name, you take some of the positive things into consideration as well. They basically even each other out, and he gets another average score of 5 in the impact department. Now, originality, he gets a below average score of 4, which is really the first department here where it's like, all right, this was below average. You know what I'm saying? Lyrics, average. Album score, good, but no classics. Song, 0. He evens out there. Impact, average. Originality was definitely not average. So, again, really one of the only things that Shine had going for him as far as being original was his voice and his delivery. And the voice, while it, you didn't necessarily mistake him for Biggie. Like, I knew who Shine was and who Biggie was, for sure. But it was similar to Biggie. It was of a similar tone and a similar type of, you understand what I'm saying? So it wasn't, it's not that he was copying Biggie. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying for you to point at there only being one thing, there's only one thing I could say about this dude that was really original. And it wasn't even really that original because it kind of sounded like Biggie a little bit anyway, right? It's just the point that I'm trying to make, that the one thing that was original about him wasn't even that original. So, I mean, maybe you could put him to a 5.5 off of his voice. keeping in mind that all other things are let's just say, even. Okay, so he's not overly original or unoriginal. He's an even keel, right? Okay, maybe his voice puts him at a 5.5. But then when you take all the other things into consideration, that there wasn't really anything original about him. His style wasn't really original. His message wasn't really original. He was talking about very typical shit. His sound wasn't overly original. His content wasn't overly original. There wasn't really, there might have been one song or two songs that I was like, all right, that was something different. That was original. So his content wasn't overly original. So you take all that into consideration and then it's like, oh, okay, maybe he's closer to a 5 or a 4.5. Then you take into consideration, and trust me, I'm saying this with full confidence, and I have them all written down, and it's easy through a 26-song catalog to point out what every one of them are. But he took a massive amount of lines from other people before him, like, blatantly, where I'm like, man, I mean, to only have 26 songs and 2 albums and take this many lines from people, especially Snoop Dogg, which is kind of random, I guess. I mean, I don't know if Snoop's one of his favorite rappers or what the deal is with that, but I don't really ever in any way equate Shine and Snoop Dogg. They're not even from the same coast or anything. So a little bit odd that that was the number one person that he seemed to be taking things from. But, you know, all in all, he was just taking a lot of stuff from a lot of people in a short amount of material. So take all those things into consideration, and he definitely gets a below-average score of 4 in the originality department. So you add all those 5 numbers up, and you divide by 5, because that's the number of categories we have, and it gives you a final rating of 3.63, which leaves Shine tied for 196th place of 223 artists done overall. So that's a pretty damn bad finish there for Shine Poe, and not only is it a poor finish, but it fell short of my expectations, even though I was never a big Shine fan. I will say this, though, man. Prior to covering Shine on here, I had absolutely no idea that this man came out of jail and turned around and became a politician. Now, like I said, before ever having that knowledge, I wasn't a big fan of Shine. After going through his catalog and having this info, I'm even less of a fan of Shine, so I have to say, even though my prediction was off, personally, I'm pretty happy with where Shine finished, which is definitely not always the case with most people. But nonetheless, man, Shine did have some big songs in his 15 minutes of fame, and even though I don't agree with a lot of his life decisions, I wish him nothing but the best going forward. So shoutouts to Shine for doing his thing, no doubt about it. I'm never my intention on here to knock anybody. I just have to present the facts and call things like I see them. Now, in January, we had 5 episodes, so we didn't get to run off any lists until our 5th episode. Only 4 here in February, and this is the 4th of the month. So being the last episode of the month, that means we get to run off all of our lists here today. Now again, I think these lists should be more exciting now going forward because we're not constantly reading the same names off over and over again every week. And now when we visit them, typically they're a lot more different each time we go over them because of the couple of week gap in between. It allows for more changes, especially in our brand new top artists of the new millennium list, which will probably change very, very often, at least in the first segment of season 3. So without further ado, let's check out our list, starting with our top 10% overall. Last time we went over these lists was in episode 5, and we had 211 artists done so far. So that list was a top 21 at that time. Today, this list will be a top 22, as we now have 219 artists covered. So we should see at least one more name in this list than we did last time, whether that's a new artist or an old one who will be slid back in. So let's check it out and see what happened here. In our number one spot overall, we have Eminem, who's in first place of 223 artists done overall. Behind him, we have Tech N9ne, who's in second. Then we have Jay-Z, who's in third. In fourth, we have Big Pun. In fifth is One Below of Binary Star. In sixth is Vinny Paz of Jedi Mind Tricks. In seventh is AZ. Behind him is Big L, who's in eighth. Directly behind him in ninth is Nas. Behind Nas is Method Man, who's in 10th. In 11th place is Inspector Deck. Behind him is Cannabis, who's in 12th. Directly behind him in 13th is Black Thought of the Roots. Behind Thought is Killer Priest, who's in 14th. Behind him in 15th is Jadakiss of the Lox. Then we have Tupac, who's in 16th place. Directly behind him in 17th is Biggie. Right behind Biggie is DMX, who's in 18th. Right behind him in 19th, we have The Last Emperor. Directly behind The Last Emperor is KRS-One, who's in 20th. And behind him, we have a tie between Pharaoh Monch and Jussalah of Jedi Mind Tricks, who are both tied for 21st place of 223 artists done overall. So there you have it. That is your current top 10% overall. And like I stated earlier, I knew there would be a new name in there, just wasn't sure who. It wound up being The Last Emperor, who we covered 2 weeks ago on episode 7 along with Cuban Link. That moves KRS-One from 19th to 20th, as well as Pharaoh Monch and Jussalah down to our 21st and final spot. Now, the reason this is news to us is because we didn't read off our lists on episode 7. So this is the first time since then that we're hearing these names. So congrats to The Last Emperor for cracking that list. And just for the record, he is officially the first artist from the new millennium to crack our top 10% overall list. So major shout outs to The Last Emperor and everybody else still holding strong onto a spot on that list. Now let's get into our top 10% lyrically. In first place, we have Eminem with a lyrical score of 9. Behind him, we have a tie for second place between One Below of Binary Star and Tech N9ne, who both got lyrical scores of 9. Behind them, we have a five-way tie for fourth place between Pharaoh Monch, Black Thought of the Roots, Nas, AZ, and Vinny Paz, who all got lyrical scores of 8.5. Behind them, we have another five-way tie for ninth place between Method Man, Jay-Z, Big Pun, Cannabis, and The Last Emperor, who all got lyrical scores of 8. In a seven-way tie behind them, we have Master Ace, GZA, Common, Big L, Talib Kweli, Esoteric, and Inspector Deck, who all got lyrical scores of 7.5. And then in a 12-way tie for our 21st and final spot here today, we have KRS-One, Kool G Rap, Lord Finesse, Sean Price of Helter Skelter, Slug of Atmosphere, Jadakiss of the Lox, Killer Priest, Benefit, Ludacris, Brother Ali, Sauce Money, and Cuban Link, who all got lyrical scores of 7. So while nobody from today's episode cracked this list, we do see two names in this list that we didn't have when we read it off back in episode 5. Those two names would be The Last Emperor, who's tied for 9th place lyrically, and Cuban Link, who is tied for our 21st and final spot lyrically. Two very serious lyricists there that got extremely high lyrically in a very short period of time and a very small body of work. So definitely incredibly impressive stuff there from each of those two. So shout outs to Cuban Link, The Last Emperor, and anyone else in this list here today. The cream of the crop when it comes to lyrics, no question. Now let's get into our particular decades list, starting with our 80s decade. So your top 5 artists to come out in the 80s are as follows. Number 1, KRS-One. Number 2, Slick Rick. Number 3, Rakim. Number 4, Rev Run of Run DMC. And in our 5th and final spot, LL Cool J. So obviously no artist from today's episode can qualify for this list or the next, but aside from that, still no changes here today. So let's check out our 90s decade list, which is only the second time we're taking a look at this list since completing season 2 of the 90s. So your top 5 artists of the 90s are as follows. Number 1, Eminem. Number 2, Tech N9ne. Number 3, Jay-Z. Number 4, Big Pun. And number 5, One Below of Binary Star. So no changes at all to this list today either, and the longer removed we get from this list, the less likely it is to change in my opinion. So now for only the second time this season, let's check out our top 5 artists of the new millennium thus far, and I definitely expect there to be changes in this one today, but I'm curious to see how different it looks from the last time we read it off, so let's read this off and then we'll discuss. In our number 1 spot so far, we have The Last Emperor. In 2nd place, we have Cuban Link. In 3rd is Brother Ali. In 4th is 50 Cent. And in our fifth and final spot, we have Stickman of Dead Prez. So as I expected, definitely some major changes and some things we need to talk about here. So first and foremost, we see the Last Emperor taking over the top spot here so far. And I'm very curious to see if this stays like this, because I would have never had that guy anywhere near my top, but man, was he dope. Behind him, we see Cuban Link, who we also covered in Episode 7 with The Last Emperor, so that was obviously a solid episode, producing two top artists of the new millennium thus far. Those two additions move Brother Ali from first to third place, and then we see another new addition here in 50 Cent, who we covered last week in Episode 8, and again, I won't lie, man, I really not only expected 50 to finish higher, but I wanted him to. Unfortunately for me and 50, not quite the case, at least at this current moment, but that brings us to our final name on the list, Stickman of Dead Prez, whom we covered in our very first episode of Season 3. So even though Stickman did go from being in second place to being in our fifth and final spot here today, I do gotta give him credit for not only making it to this list in the first place, but for still hanging on to a top spot in Season 3 here after 9 episodes and another 19 artists covered. Now, I'm not sure that he's going to be able to hold on to that spot for too long, but we'll reassess in a month from now. The only other things to talk about here is Evidence of Dilated Peoples, M1 of Dead Prez, and Sauce Money all being slid out of this top 5 artists of the new millennium list. Regardless though, man, major shoutouts to these 5 MCs for being some of the top artists in their respective decades thus far, no question. Now let's move on to our regional lists. We're going to start off with our East Coast. So your top 3 artists to come out of the East Coast thus far are Jay-Z from Brooklyn, New York, Big Pun from the Bronx, New York, and Vinnie Paz of Jedi Mind Tricks from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Moving across the country to our West Coast, your top artist to come out of the West Coast thus far is Tupac from Marin County, California. Behind him is Razzcast from Carson, California. And in our third and final spot is Ice Cube of NWA from Los Angeles, California. Moving down south, your top 3 artists to come out of the South thus far are Benefit from Florida, Ludacris from Atlanta, Georgia, and Lil Wayne from New Orleans, Louisiana. Swinging over to our Midwest, your top 3 artists to come out of the Midwest thus far are Eminem from Detroit, Michigan, Tech N9ne from Kansas City, Missouri, and One Below of Binary Star from Pontiac, Michigan. So, aside from our 80s and 90s list, this is the only other one here today that doesn't change, and I'll tell you, man, the more I look into these lists, the more mind-blowing they are. The top 2 slots overall in the study are both from the Midwest, who also have 3 of the top 5 artists. And the East Coast has 3 of the top 7 artists so far. So for anyone to crack the East Coast or Midwest list is going to be ridiculous, and they're going to wind up having to finish at least top 5 overall. So crazy stuff there. Safe to say those lists probably won't change all that much, if at all, going forward. The West Coast and the South list, they definitely have some room for people to slide in, but it hasn't happened in a while and it wasn't done today. So we'll have to keep an eye on those moving forward to see if those change at all. But man, those other two are really tough and going to be really, really hard to crack. Like I said, in order to crack it, you're literally just going to have to be overall one of the greatest of all time, or you're not even going to come anywhere near that East Coast and Midwest list, which is crazy because... And I'm not saying this for any particular reason. I'm just going off the top of my head. If you were to ask me about regions, I mean, automatically, and this probably does have to do with my bias, automatically, I would have jumped right to the East Coast. I would have been like, yo, the East Coast, without a doubt, number one. You know what I'm saying? And then after that, I probably would have jumped to the West. I would have just automatically been like, bro, NWA, Eazy-E, Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, Tupac... You know, the list goes on and on. The Game, Kendrick Lamar, if you want to get into the newer guys and stuff like that. So, you know, I just felt like if I was to just assume on some opinionated shit where the top artists were going to come from, it would have never been from the Midwest, that's for sure. And maybe that was ignorant and arrogant of me, for sure, and I'll admit that. But, you know, like I said, this study has humbled me. It's opened my eyes. It's definitely taught me some things. And I promise you... I have not involved my bias in any of these write-ups or scorings or placements or anything of anybody. Now, the only list left to read off is our new list that we've implemented this season in season 3, the top 3 female artists so far. So your top 3 female artists so far are Eve, who's in 74th place overall, Queen Latifah, who's in 92nd, and MC Lyte, who's directly behind her, tied for 93rd place of 223 artists done overall. So while this list does stay the same as far as the names are concerned, we do see that these artists were slid back from where their overall finishes were a month ago. Technically, it won't matter what place they're in, it's just going to matter where they are in conjunction to each other. You know, this list won't ever change unless either a new female comes along and takes over a top spot here, or if one of these three artists comes out with new material that moves either them or the other two. So like I said, hasn't happened yet since we've implemented the list, didn't happen here today. I do certainly believe that this list will change. I don't foresee this list staying like this. And again, that's not to knock those three artists on there. I fuck with Eve the most out of those three artists. That's not because she's in first, because I fuck with Lil' Kim the most out of any female artist, and Lil' Kim is not even on that list. So again, go figure. I don't know how my bias comes into this, but very, very exciting stuff here today, as we not only get to read off our list for the first time in a month, but we also saw a lot of changes to almost all of these lists, which isn't always the case, but that will probably happen more often going forward as they're more spaced out now. Again, these lists are all in writing on the Tale of the Tapes Facebook page. If you're interested in that, the Facebook page is www.facebook.com/Tale of the Tapes Podcast. You could just give that page a like and a follow to stay up to date with everything. You can interact with the podcast. You could give ideas. You could give predictions, suggestions, whatever the case is. You can also give the host website a visit at www.anchor.fm/Tale of the Tapes. Both of those links are spelled completely normally. On the host website, you'll see a support button. I do appreciate those of you that have been hitting that. If we could continue that going forward, that would be awesome. But yeah, other than that, man, today was certainly an eventful episode, but that'll do it for this one here today. We'll read off our list again in 4 weeks on episode 13, covering Pep Love and Young Jeezy. On next week's episode, we'll be covering Necro and Remedy, who are about as polar opposite as you can get as far as artists are concerned. So that should be an interesting one, to say the least. Tale of the Tapes. Peace.
Tale of the Tapes. Might as well.